Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are pulling back the curtain on the things that make modern digital experiences feel so seamless. You know, the invisible stuff that turns a static screen into something that feels alive. We're diving deep into the three essential pillars of digital design: movement, transitions, and interactivity. So if you're building a product or maybe just trying to sound like you know what you're talking about in a UX meeting, this is for you. Our mission today is to understand not just what these things are, but really the why behind them, how they guide you, create engagement, and, well, how they shape the entire user experience.
And that why is everything. It's the difference between just describing what a website does and actually justifying a design choice. When a designer picks, say, a specific fade speed, they need to be able to explain why that choice makes the experience better. And these three principles, movement, transitions, and interactivity, they give you the language for that. It's how you get from just functional to truly engaging.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the most immediate element, the one you notice first, movement. So when we say movement, what are we really talking about here?
We're talking about the micro interactions. Any kind of intentional animated motion happening right there on the screen.
Right, like an icon that gives a little wiggle.
Exactly. It's what gives life to a button, shows you the state of an object, or just grabs your attention before you've even clicked on anything. It's the interface basically saying, hey, I'm alive. I'm ready.
That concept of liveness is a great way to put it.
It's crucial. And good movement, it's almost always functional. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. Our brains are just hardwired to notice motion. So the purpose is always about focus and feedback. You use it to draw the user's eye to something important, a new notification, an error message.
Or that big buy now button.
Precisely. And it's also vital for showing that something is happening over time.
The loading spinner, the classic.
Yeah, that little spinning icon or the bar that fills up. That movement is telling you, don't worry, I'm working on it.
Yeah.
It manages your patience. Without it, you just assume the app is broken.
So it's not just for looks. It's a communication tool.
It's a required communication tool, yeah.
And there's a real art to the execution, isn't there? I mean, in a level of detail that most people probably don't consciously notice.
Oh, absolutely. We have to talk about easing.
Okay.
Most people think motion is just linear, you know, constant speed from A to B. But the best digital products, they use nonlinear movement easing to mimic physics.
To make it feel more real.
Exactly. And ease out motion, for example, starts fast and then slows down gracefully. It feels so much more natural. A sudden linear animation just feels robotic, cheap, even if you can't put your finger on why.
So all those little animated icons that sort of swell when you hover, or the famous parallax scrolling effect.
Oh, parallax, perfect example.
Where the background moves slower than the foreground. All of that is using calculated easing to create that illusion of depth.
Yes, all highly calculated.
But here's the paradox I always run into. The advice is always, use it sparingly, keep it subtle, don't distract. But if it's too subtle, doesn't it fail at its main job, which is to get your attention?
That is that tightrope every designer walks.
Yeah.
And the answer really lies in context and consistency. It has to be noticeable enough to work, but never so loud that you have to consciously ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, if a button bounces for 2 seconds, it's just annoying.
Right, it's a distraction.
But if it gently pulses for, say, 300 milliseconds with a specific curve, it just guides your eye and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And consistency across a product is key. It trains you unconsciously on what to expect.
Okay, so focusing the eye versus hijacking it, that's a great distinction. So if movement is the action within a single screen, let's move on to transitions, which is about the flow between them. We're shifting from the motion of like one little button to how you get from one entire screen to another. Transitions are the road builders of the experience. They make sure the journey isn't just a sudden jarring jump.
That's a great analogy. Think about hitting a pothole when you're driving.
Okay.
You immediately stop thinking about where you're going and focus on that jolt you just felt, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, a sudden cut between two totally different screens is the digital version of that pothole. There's a term for it, actually. Change blindness. The brain just struggles to keep up when the whole visual world changes instantly.
So the transition is there to smooth that out, to reduce the cognitive load.
Exactly. It provides a visual bridge. It leverages your spatial memory. It gives you a clue about where the new information came from.
Did it slide in from the left, meaning I went back? Or did it zoom in, meaning I'm drilling down deeper?
Precisely. It helps you build a mental map of the application.
So it's basically the product telling a story, pacing it for you. If you're reading a serious report, maybe a slow cross-dissolve feels right.
Right, it conveys a certain gravitas.
But if you're in a game, you want a fast, aggressive swipe or a cut to get you into the action. The style itself sets the tone.
It's part of the brand, for sure.
And the vocabulary here is huge. You've got your classic fades, the swipes and slides we see on our phones all the time, the zoom in and out.
And even more complex things, like elements that morph from one screen to the next.
But again, like with movement, the best practice here is restraint, right?
Restraint is critical. A transition has to be efficient. If it's too slow, it just gets in the way. It makes the product feel sluggish.
So what's a good rule of thumb?
For standard UI, you generally want to keep it under 500 milliseconds. Fast enough that it doesn't feel like a wait, but just slow enough to register what happened. And it has to match the task. Mm. If you hit submit on a form, you expect an instant result, not a slow motion reveal.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so this brings us to our third pillar, which feels like the most important one. We have elements that move, and we have the paths between them. Now, we need the user's power to influence them. Here's where it gets really interesting. Interactivity. This is the moment we stop just, you know, looking at something and we start controlling it. Interactivity is when you, the user, can directly influence the product's state or content.
It's the feedback loop. It's what makes a product feel like a collaboration, not a lecture.
And this is where real engagement comes from, right? Personalization, adaptation.
Yes. When a user interacts, they're investing. Mm-hmm. And the product has to respond. The goal is twofold. You need immediate feedback, I heard you, and then long-term personalization, where the product actually learns from your choices. That's mm-hmm. what keeps people coming back.
And we interact all day long with the basic stuff. Buttons, links, forms, video controls. We all know what a menu is.
The standard toolkit.
But the more advanced forms are where modern design really gets interesting, especially with, like, complex data. I'm thinking of hot spots on a diagram.
Yeah, you hover and more information pops up. It lets the user control the information density.
Right, or sliders, toggles, all those multi-step forms that use branching logic.
Where your answer to one question changes the next one you see.
Exactly. It's all about giving the user agency without just overwhelming them.
And if there's one single non-negotiable rule for interactivity, it is feedback. Clear, effective feedback.
An interactive element that doesn't show you it's been activated is...
it's just broken. It's bad design. It's why things change color when you hover, or why they glow, or why they make a sound.
And in modern design, we have to talk about haptic feedback.
Oh, yes. That's a huge one.
A little vibration.
A little click you feel on your phone screen. That's a physical confirmation that the system got your input, even if the visual change was tiny. It makes it feel so much more responsive and real.
It's a fantastic point. It's like the tactile proof of the digital action. Hmm. So what about best practices here, especially with accessibility and the paradox of choice?
Accessibility is first and foremost. That means making sure buttons are big enough to actually tap on a touchscreen. We talk about Fitt's Law here, making sure the target is big enough. And it also means having settings for people who are sensitive to motion so they can turn it off and still use the product.
So interactivity has to work, even if the movement and transitions are gone.
It has to. And for choice, simplicity always wins. Don't throw 20 options at a user on one screen. That's choice paralysis. Good interactivity is about showing the right choices at the right time.
Okay, so we've got the three pieces: movement, transitions, and interactivity. But you never really see them in isolation, do you?
Never. A great product is like a carefully choreographed dance between all three. They have to work together to create that seamless feeling.
Let's look at a common example, like a mobile app's main navigation bar at the bottom of the screen.
Perfect. Watch how all three work together in less than a second. When you hover your finger over an icon, it might gently pulse or scale up a bit.
That's the movement, the pre-tap feedback.
Right. Then when you actually tap, the screen might do a quick swipe from right to left. That's the transition, reinforcing that spatial map. You've moved one level deeper.
And the whole thing is driven by interactivity.
Yeah.
Tapping the icon, getting the new screen. It's a loop where each element validates the other.
It's a perfect tiny loop of all three.
That choreography is so important. What about something like an interactive infographic that you scroll through?
Another great example.
Yes.
As you scroll, that's the interactivity.
The charts and graphs might slide or fade into view just as you get to them.
Yep. That's movement and transition, triggered by your input. It makes discovering the data feel active, not passive.
And then you might have a little hotspot you can tap on a specific data point.
Exactly. And a little text box appears, probably with its own little micro animation. That's interactivity supported by movement.
So connecting this all back to the practical side of things, for a designer or a product manager listening, this is really about changing how you talk about these things, right?
It's everything. You're not just talking about effects anymore. You're talking about outcomes. This is how you justify your work.
So you don't say, let's add a fade transition because it looks cool.
No. You say, let's use a fast, subtle transition here because it will reduce the user's cognitive load between these two dense screens, which improves clarity and flow.
And you don't use a hover animation for fun.
You use movement to focus attention on the main call to action, which encourages engagement.
These are the kinds of phrases that define good design justification. Things like enhances the user experience, supports navigation, or improves clarity.
Right. It moves the whole conversation away from I like this to this achieves our goal. It's about objective performance.
So what does this all mean? Let's recap. We've seen that movement guides your attention and gives you that immediate feedback.
Mm.
Transitions manage the flow between screens, preventing that jarring change blindness.
Right. They build that mental map.
And interactivity gives you, the user, control and influence backed up by clear feedback, even haptics.
And we kept saying that the best practice for movement and transitions is subtlety, sparingly, to avoid distraction.
Less is more.
So here's a thought I want to leave you with. If the goal is this kind of intuitive, almost invisible usability, what happens when a product goes the other way? What happens when a designer decides to just maximize everything? You know, loading the screen with crazy parallax, slow, flashy transitions, and tons of micro interactions everywhere.
When the flash and polish take over.
Exactly. Does that aggressive aesthetic choice eventually become counterproductive? Does it actually get in the way of the intuitive experience they were trying to create? I mean, how much digital polish is too much?
A perfect question to keep in mind for every swipe, tap, and transition you see today. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive. We'll catch you next time.